Good morning, everyone. This is welcome to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. I am your host, Leo Landaverde with Greenland Advisors, and my gracious co-host, Claudine. Say hello, Claudine.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm just soaked and wet
yes.
on the drive here.
It was an amazing drive-in.
So, there's...
No drought?
No drought anymore in California.
Can't wait to hit the lake this summer?
Yes. There's just water everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I come from Fresno, so, you know, there are reservoirs that just about everywhere you
right.
drive, there's a space that usually is empty, right? There's just dry patches of land.
Right.
All water.
All water.
Everywhere.
I'll tell you, the highway had some huge, huge flooding coming in.
Yeah.
I was surprised. And yeah, boy, you have to be careful.
But you know what happens to us Californians on the road with a little bit of rain, right?
Right.
We don't do very well. And we are lucky that we don't have the East Coast weather, right?
Right.
How do people manage there?
In the snow. Ugh.
You know, I have friends in Wisconsin, and 6 feet of snow. So you come out of the house, open the door, and there is basically piles of snow either right. to the left or the right.
Right.
We don't deal with that.
Right. No,
so
thank goodness.
We love it being here in California. So we have a great show for you today. We had such a great feedback. We got some great feedback from having Harpreet last week
right.
that this whole topic about building a business that you can eventually sell, it's a hot topic.
It is. It is.
And there's so much that goes into it that people don't think about it. You know, think about it. You know, it's probably the most significant event on an entrepreneur's life, don't you think?
I think so. And you know what? I was thinking about our conversation last week, and I was thinking that one of the comments that we were talking about, and Harpreet and I had been commenting back and forth about how 80% of the businesses don't sell. And I
right.
wanted to clarify that, because I think maybe I want people to know that 80% of the businesses don't sell largely because they're not put up for sale. People are not thinking to sell. It's not 80% of businesses that are listed for sale don't sell. It's 80% of businesses in general don't sell, largely because people don't think about selling them. You know, they want to retire, they close, you know, for whatever reasons, the business discontinues, particularly in small businesses.
Yeah. One thing that is clear, no matter where you are, and we happen to be in the Central Valley, and
right.
we love being here, the breadbasket of America, and it's just great businesses here. People, you know, think, oh, you know, the great tech companies, the great companies overall happen to be elsewhere and not in the Central Valley. I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case anymore. There is a great businesses coming into the Valley and started here in the area.
Started here. And I think necessity is the mother of invention. And
right.
one of the things is for traditionally, the Valley has been an agricultural community and
right.
less on the business side, so to speak, in terms of, you know, maybe traditional types of business like retail and so forth. So people started businesses.
Yeah, so I want us to, we have some great stuff to talk to you guys about today as to about real life situations as about buying and selling companies that are happening for us in our businesses and as we advise clients
mm-hmm.
that are happening. So Claudine, you have some great stories you're going to share with us today, and I have a couple of stories to tell you
yeah.
As well. But one of the things that we started talking about last time is about the process of building and selling a company. It's not overnight.
Correct. Correct.
So you almost have to think about, if you decided to sell your business today, you almost have to think about it 3 years prior. It takes a while to get your business ready for sale. And there are a lot of moving parts in it. But even before that, I advise now, you know, because I do a fair amount of speaking to startups.
Mm-hmm.
Folks that are starting to start a company, you know, the next unicorn, the next Uber, the next Airbnb, the next great billion-dollar valuation company. And I tell them, start with the end in mind.
Correct. Absolutely.
What do you think about that?
Absolutely. And in fact, that's not just in buying and selling. It's in so many areas of our business. You know, when we start, we would say, for example, we have people who want to get into a partnership and they want to start a business.
Right.
We start talking about exit plans, in at least with my clients. We talk about exit plans from day one.
From day one.
From day one. If let's just say, for example, you get into this and 5 years from now you say, hey, this just isn't working for me. And you know, we want to be able to exit the business without demolishing it. We want to be able to exit in a way right. that, you know, preserves everything you've worked for. So,
yeah, I mean, this is really great stuff. So, I have some notes. I also like to have some notes so I don't get too scattered because, you know, I can talk for hours and we realize our audiences may not want to hear us for that long. Anyway, what worked 10 years ago doesn't work today anymore. I mean, look at the landscape and what I call it, the collapse of retail.
Yes.
We were just talking about before this show that some of the things that are happening, I just cannot believe, I would not have imagined 10 years ago that Payless shoes will go out of business.
Right.
And I'm walking around my friendly, you know, mall and here, the fashion fair in Fresno and on Friday night. And here I am. And I came to the realization that, you know, what you read in the media and you actually see it in real life. You see this going out of sale, major across the windows.
Right.
It sat with me and I'm talking to my son, you know, my youngest. And I'm like, wow. I've gone many, many times over the last 20 years. You know, it's a good place.
Right.
You know, where you don't make a lot of money, you got to find shoes. You go to Payless shoes, right?
Right, right.
Iconic.
Right.
But not just Payless shoes. It's across all retail spectrum. Retail. Can you name a few that affecting you?
Yeah, we just saw in Modesto B that looks like Victoria's Secret's closing stores.
Yeah.
JCPenney's is closing stores. It looks like they're not going to close the Modesto and the Turlock stores, but they are closing JCPenney's across the board.
We heard about Gap, right?
Gap. Also,
Gap is pulling out of certain markets. You know, we don't have Gap in Fresno anymore. And it couldn't do any wrong in the 70s and 80s. It was just everywhere. It was
where you got Levi's.
It was ubiquitous, right? Yeah. So there is, if you are a business owner with a startup or thinking about starting a business, you got to understand the trend. The trend is your friend. And I'll be hard-pressed to say somebody, hey, you know, you got this great idea. You know, you got this great way of putting together a dress, making dresses. And you're going to, I would strongly discourage you to get retail space, right? Because it's, you know, Amazon, what did Amazon do? It basically rocked the world. It basically reconfigured retail and retail experience. So we're gonna, you know, there's one thing that I want to talk about before we get into it, that this is a cautionary tale for people who are building businesses. And if you've been watching the news over the last, you know, year, you probably heard the stories of Theranos, this biotech company, you know, this the unicorn of valuation, had north of $1 billion valuation, not too long ago, you know, woman, Elizabeth Holmes, and who at some point was, you know, spending time with former presidents and speaking and seemed to have it together. And it was worth, at least on paper, $1 billion. Can you imagine going from that to zero?
It's amazing. And it looks like she is actually looking at $700 million.
And potential charge or wire fraud and all that stuff. I mean, so we often hear the good side, right, of selling a business and trying to grow a business, but you got to go in it with eyes wide open.
You do, and I have to ask myself, like, how did a person like this get caught up? I'm absolutely certain that when she started, she did not intend to have this, you know, be the end result, but somehow the wheel was spinning, and somehow, you know, you just kept on going and lost control.
Yeah, I think it is often greed, but not always. Sometimes it's a combination of misinformation, wrong advice, not, you know, the right people whispering in your ear.
Right.
You know, as an entrepreneur, if you're a founder, CEO, whether you have $1 million business or a $10 million business, you got to have the right people on your team telling you the right things.
Absolutely. You can't know everything.
You can't possibly know everything. It's hard enough just to running a business. Then you have to worry about the accounting side of things and the legal side of things, which I'm always talking to you about the legal side of things.
Right.
I'm always worried about the legal side of things. First of all, because it's my job when I'm hired as a CFO to worry about the legal, you know, the risk and the risk mitigation.
Liability.
And then I tell you, hey, should I be worried about this, Claudine? And then you go, yep, you should. And let's talk about it. Let's take it offline and talk about it.
Right.
So stay tuned because we're going to come back. We're going to come back and keep talking about this. So you right now, you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine here on KFI at 1306. We'll be right back. Okay, so we're back, guys. The perils of a live show. My micro was off for a second. So, hey, welcome back. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Hi, Claudine, and let's keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so let's kind of get into the meat and potatoes now. So stuff is happening every day with your business. So you had a pretty exciting thing you want to kind of talk the audience through. And I think it's a great idea that we talk, you know, deconstruct the deal, basically.
Yeah. Oh, so our office is involved currently in a couple of buy and sell situations right now with various clients. And I think it's important that when you first start out and you're thinking about selling your business, it's important to keep in mind, you know, who are you marketing to and who is your market if you're going to sell your business. Some people, you know, have family members and the business is, you know, grown and developed over the years for the sole purpose of passing it on down to generations. Depending on what type of business you have, if you have a corporation and we have shares and things like that that need to be evaluated, it's not typical that a business is just simply handed over to the next generation. And the reason being is that the older generation, perhaps that built it, needs to get some sort of equity out of it so that they can move on and, you know, have their retirement and so forth. So we structure buy-sell agreements. A lot of times they're internal. Another way and another really popular way of going is key employees. Selling to key employees. And if you structure your business that way, because your employees are on the inside.
Are you talking about like an ESOP type of thing, like an employee stock option program? Or
well, employee stock option, no. I'm talking about identifying a key employee who may want to take your shoes.
Oh, selling a key employee.
Correct. And you can set up a situation where the seller essentially finances it. Most businesses, when they're purchased, are purchased with third-party money somehow. But selling to a key employee oftentimes ensures that the business is well cared for because the employee has been in the business, they understand the business, they've grown and developed within the business, and they are very well suited to take the shoes of the previous owner.
Which makes sense, right?
Makes great sense. It's a great alternative. So if you have been building a business and perhaps you're thinking about changing industries or perhaps you're thinking about retiring, think about perhaps selling to a key employee and structuring a payment plan that goes over the course of years. And we oftentimes structure it as a percentage of profit, or sometimes we just do a simple promissory note. It can be structured any number of ways, but they're those are kind of, you know, as opposed to going out on the open market and going out on the open market. Some industries fare better than others. And then once you do that, once you decide to go out onto the open market or you decide to sell the business, then we have to start looking at what are the mechanics of actually doing it.
Right.
You know, people don't just walk through the door with a checkbook wide open and write a check and walk back out the door. It's a lengthy process.
How lengthy can it be?
It can be there's no limit. It can be something that goes over the course of a year, 18 months, depending on what it is we're buying and selling, how many assets, what the assets are. Farming operations oftentimes take a long time to sell because there's just a lot of moving parts. We've got crops and, you know, land deals and leases that are involved. And so those things need to be negotiated out. If you're dealing with third-party money to finance it, so for example, suppose you have a loan coming in from a bank or some sort
like
of...
SBA loan.
SBA loan.
7A or something.
So those are a challenge because the SBA guarantees the loan. So now you are not just preparing your business to sell for the new owner and getting all of those things ready, but you now have to have approval of SBA and meet all of their requirements.
Another party to the table. Another which makes party. It more exciting.
Yep. So, you know, then we have the mechanics. How do you get an offer? What does an offer look like? Well, typically, and I think we talked about this a little bit last week, typically an offer looks like a letter of intent. And a letter of intent, or otherwise known as an LOI, a letter of intent just outlines the basics of the terms. Usually comes from the prospective buyer. Prospective buyer says, well, this is what I'm willing to pay. This is how long it's going to take me to close. This is what I want. If I want an asset only purchase, I don't want to purchase your corporation. I just want to purchase your stuff. And that's usually outlined in an LOI.
Which is usually the best way to avoid litigation is not to buy any shares, but actually purchase the assets.
It really depends. If you can avoid purchasing the shares, there is less liability because, for example, if there was something that happened 4 years ago or 3 years ago, and it may be an employee situation or some sort of a vendor situation, you can, the new owner can be liable because the new owner it's actually the company that's liable.
Right.
So when you own the company, you own the liability.
And when the company gets sued, the shares get sued.
But on the other hand of that, if we have a business that maybe has a lot of branding, that has a trademark logo, that has a trademark name, now you can't really avoid.
You have to buy the shares.
You have to buy the shares.
Hey, by the way, if you're listening to this show right now, if you have any questions, talking to us, to me and Claudine, feel free to call. 551-3483 is the studio line. 551-3483. Feel free to call and love to talk to you. And obviously, it would be great to have somebody other than me and Claudine talking. So, so you were talking about a situation about a letter of intent and an actual potential situation. And what can you share that it would be useful to the audience as to, you know, the good, what good can happen and the bad can happen. You know, what happens when a due diligence thing goes wrong?
Right.
Goes south.
So
and when it goes well.
When it goes well. So typically what happens in the very beginning, you know, we agree on the basic terms of the offer, and the new prospective buyer wants to have what they call a period of due diligence.
Right.
Where they have an opportunity to come in and do, you know, look at all the things that you've been preparing, as we talked about last week, you know, your financials. So now you have a person who is prospective buyer, and they want to see your financial records, and they want to see your leases, and they want to sometimes even talk to your employees and, you know, understand the processes within your business. So, for example, if you're a retail business, you know, they want to come in and see, you know, what do you owe and who are you dealing with and what contracts do you have? This period of time is critical for the new buyer, but it's also critical for the seller to be very, very, very careful. So a client this week had an LOI come in multi-million dollar LOI come in.
Transaction, yeah.
And the potential buyer would like a 30-day due diligence period with no deposit. And then after the 30 days, if the prospective buyer decides he doesn't want or she does not want to buy the business, they want to be able to just go ahead and walk away. And
no harm, no foul.
No harm, no foul. And I can certainly see from the buyer's perspective why you would want to do that. I want to come in. I want to see that what you have is actually you know, what you're telling me it is.
Right.
The part that the seller needs to be aware of, and we talk about this within our office, is when somebody comes in and has an opportunity to go through your books, go through your systems, talk to your employees, and know your business in a really intimate way, they now can't unlearn what they just learned.
Right.
So if, let's just say you were a very, very savvy business person, and
too savvy,
and you had some money, and you had a little dough in your pocket, and you thought to yourself, I'm kind of interested in entering the shoe business.
Ah,
and so why don't I go to the top five shoe manufacturers, that are out there, and I can send them an LOI and say I'm really interested, and I would like to have this due diligence period, and I go through each one of these businesses, and I comb through their books, and I comb through their processes, and I comb through, you know, talking to their employees, and that education that I just have, I walk away, and I have a tremendous amount of knowledge, and I can now become your competition.
How about that, eh?
Yeah.
And how often does that happen?
It happens. It happens.
Especially when there's no money involved, right?
That's right. And so, you know, sometimes I know Harpreet and I were talking about this this week. He had a business sale of some retail stores that were underway. Seller was a little bit financially strapped, okay. Was anxious to sell, got a little bit emotional. And go back to the, emotional decision conversation that we've had.
Yes.
Seller was a little emotional and, was very willing to open the doors and open the books and crossing his fingers that this sale would happen. No money down, no money in deposit. So there was, buyer had nothing on the line. Buyer decides that he doesn't want to buy the retail businesses anymore. And, mysteriously, 30 days later, seller gets a notice from the IRS.
Mysteriously,
but coincidence? Who knows?
Right.
But he, now he's suddenly being
audited by the IRS.
So
buyers, and sellers, be aware.
Be aware.
I would not ever advise a business owner who has built a sizable business to go at it alone. You need the right people advocating on your behalf.
Absolutely. And really, if you have more than one advisor, you're better off. Three minds, three sets of eyes looking at these things, because something is going to occur to somebody based on their own personal experience or education and so forth. So
right.
If you're dealing with a solid financial group, a legal team, I know my legal team, we sit in our office and discuss cases back and forth, that maybe a case is not my case or it's not something I'm working on. But we all sit together. So you're not just getting me.
Right.
You're getting my entire team, because we bounce ideas across, immediately when an LOI comes into our office, it goes out to all three attorneys in the office, and we sit and talk about that LOI amongst ourselves, regardless of whose client it is.
I know we're going to talk about it some more, get into this, but a true story. So I had a business in LA who was being contemplated for a potential acquisition, and the potential buyer came in, did due diligence that carried over 2-3 months, and then they there was this virtual love fest going on, but the company stopped selling, so it stopped growing. So while the founding team, the executive team was helping in the negotiations, trying to strike a deal, the company was falling apart. So one key employee left. They lost a key account. Pretty soon, the potential buyer became suspicious, and guess what? Pulled out.
Yep.
So can you imagine, after all that emotional investment and trying to sell your company, you have to go back and tell your constituents, your employees, your vendors that it's not happening, and then you have to rebuild, and then your sales are going down? What do you think is going to happen to the morale?
Right. You bring up a really good point. The idea that your potential buyer is going to be going through their due diligence period, and they're going to be in your business, and they're going to be physically, literally in your business.
Yeah.
And they're going to be talking to your employees. What happens if your key employee meets the potential buyer and says, "Oh, I'm not working for this guy.
Yeah,
I'm not working for this girl."
Yep. Hey, so I hope this is a juicy enough conversation that we're having, and feel free to engage us. Right now, we're going to go on a commercial break, but you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. We'll be right back. Hey, you still there? We're still Leo and Claudine, Business and Legal Talk. So want to make sure that you're still there. We're having a great discussion on really exercising your right of capitalism. Bought, you know, have built a business. Now it's time to sell it. What do we do next? So we're talking about there's great stories, and those great stories make it in the media. You know, companies that actually go public or choose to actually take their business public. So, but most of them don't. I mean, no. 90% of all transactions happen to be on the private side. There's no public involved. There is somebody with money or trying to look for an opportunity or trying to get into a market and then buying an existing business. Now, I'm starting to get a lot into the tech world and the software side. And a company has to make a decision when they're looking at another potential revenue stream. If I'm a tech company, is there's this competitor out there that I can acquire, and I could acquire them if the cost of me building something, some asset myself, would be more, and then the branding and the goodwill and all that. So this is usually what happens is, there are all kinds of buyers. You know, there's the mom and pop. You know, there is that the retired executive who worked 30 years at a firm, came into a couple million dollars, and they want to get into something because they just want to be at home, you know, in the rocking chair.
Right.
And there is the spectrum of those to your institutional buyers or your VCs or your private equity who want to take. I love the story of Burt's Bees. You know, mm-hmm. there's you know, the
chapstick.
Yeah, uh-huh. But you know that the stories actually. I don't know why. I just thought about it. Started with this guy who basically he was a beekeeper,
right?
And I believe there was some smaller city, probably in Oregon or somewhere, you know, where there's just a lot of open space. And he used to go to these fairs and just basically sell his honey and you know, little products. It was a very, very small artisan type business. The guy had no knowledge of business; he just loved caring for those bees, Burt's Bees, right?
Right.
And then this lady comes along and says, hey, you got something here. Let's take it to a whole nother level. Fast forward 15, 20 years, he got bought out early, by the way. You know,
right.
He probably got a couple of million dollars. The lady that bought him out, that eventually grew the company, sold to a private equity group, ended up cashing in on $300 million.
Wow.
Now, you don't hear about that every day.
Right.
But for every story like that, there's stuff that doesn't go well. So what does that mean to you? So there are, you know, I think we could start talking about it now, Claudine. There's, it's all about value. It's all about building enduring value, right?
Right.
And it's much more than just looking at the numbers. And I have a list of things that we can talk about, you know, that increases value.
You know, and that on that subject, this is a key thing that a lot of sellers do. They get in the mindset, they perhaps have a strong commitment from a potential buyer, and then they start to think in their mind, they're kind of halfway out the door. You know, oh, I'm almost retired. This is going to be so great. We're mentally already kind of starting to spend the money that's coming in. And, you know, we're you know,
right.
we can go from, you know, working 80 hours to, you know, taking a break real fast. And next thing you know, we're saying to ourselves, well, why should I invest in, you know, 5 new trucks for the business? Or
okay.
Why should I spend that money right now and continue to, you know, invest in the business as if I'm going to be here in a year? And I'll tell you, it more deals fall apart, and you have to be so prepared and mentally prepared. And this is why working with a strong team around you who can keep you kind of propped up and going. And yes, it's important that if you were going to buy 5 trucks for your business this year because the ones you had were worn out,
right.
You need to do that. And you need to keep that business going because these deals do fall apart, you know, and it does happen. They take a different twist and turn along the way. And so it's important that you keep one foot on the ground through the entire process and having a strong team around you. And we worry about a lot of this stuff. You just how we work with our clients is we keep them working, keep them doing what they do. If they're, you know, making shoes or building fences, whatever it is they're doing, they stay doing what they do and let us worry about the rest of it. And I think that helps sellers from just checking out too early.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. And you know, while you're doing that on our end, what we do is whenever we start working with a company, we're all about creating kind of a franchise model.
Correct.
You know that the franchise model doesn't really mean that you're going to go out and sell franchises. It's a way of saying to a potential buyer, mm-hmm. right? Because you always should be thinking about whether you're going to pass it to the next generation. More likely, more often than not, you're going to end up selling it. Do you have something that can be replicatable and scaled?
Right.
That franchising concept means that can I take this cookie cutter approach to the way you run your company and you do that here in Modesto, could I do that in LA?
Right.
And do you have you left nothing to chance? Is everything systematized?
Right.
You know what I always say, is it documented? Do you have a documented way of doing things and cannot be all in your head? Now, if you were to ask me today, Leo, what could I do today to increase the value of my business and that I could sell it for 5 times what it's worth is, ask yourself these questions. How many days, weeks, and months can the business run without you?
Right. And if that answer is, you know, 5 minutes,
then you don't have a business that can That's be right. sold yet.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And hence the read and need, as you were talking about. We keep talking about advisors, but advisors don't always have to be outside advisors like we are whispering to the, you know, the CEOs and the founders' ears. It's key employees who have valuable knowledge that you can build upon. And you're, you know, we have spent time talking in prior shows about when a relationship with an employee is a liability, if you don't treat them right, and it can turn into a liability and a wrongful termination situation. But the flip side is also true. Your employees are key assets. They have intellectual knowledge that can be helpful to you. So use them to your advantage. So,
and that kind of goes also along the way of, you know, they are also your potential selling market.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
I mean, they really
you
are.
You can sell to an employee.
They oftentimes, they know the business. They know it from the ground up. And they've been working in the business. They're a great contact, so to speak.
So here's, let's run down the list real quick so we can, you know. So number one is seek advice, right? We talked about that. Work to boost your profits. That's the number two. So listen to this. Don't expect high offers if you're only breaking even. Right? Let me say that again. Don't expect high offers if you're only breaking even. Well, you're going to ask me, well, how do I know I'm breaking even? Well, you should know that as an owner. You should know that because if you're running a business and if you're looking at the expenses and the your revenue and somebody's doing your books and you should be doing your books, which I've talked about 1,000 times already, you should know your break-even point. If you don't know your break-even point, how do you know you're making a profit?
Look, at any time a buyer comes in and has to rebuild your business or looks at your business and says it is not functioning at its full potential, you are going to get lowball offers.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to skeleton your business right away. And if they come in and look at and they say, oh, I see so much potential here, your offer is going to be commensurate with that.
Hey, I'm going to read this to you. Tell me what you think. So you also don't want, speaking on the topic of boosting profits, you also don't want to take too much money out of the business. Interesting.
Right.
Good retained earnings on your balance sheet, which is the portion of your net income that hasn't been distributed to the shareholders. Right. Why do you think that is?
Well, I can tell you that, cannibalizing your business before the new owner takes over.
What
is
a great concept.
Also known as litigation.
Oh.
So
how so?
Do not cannibalize because the buyer has a expectation. They've looked at the books. They've looked at what's there. They have an expectation of what they're going to of what they're buying. And they come in and all of a sudden, you know, they thought they were buying a Cadillac and they're getting a Volkswagen Bug. It's a problem.
Right, right.
It will be a problem. Guaranteed.
Now, number three, right? Increase sales and lower expenses. Duh, right? If you're not working as the owner of your business and increasing sales, then or lowering your expenses, then that's back to 101, right?
It is. And then it also leaves you super vulnerable when that day comes if that deal falls apart. Now what? Now you have to start you're behind the eight ball.
Well, we were just talking about, you have a story about somebody who just basically had to start over and the deal didn't go through? No, that was probably my story. So business, right. So key account is lost, key employee leaves, deal falls apart, company almost basically went under. over a bad deal. So let me tell you, it took years for the founders to actually get it back together. Eventually, they actually ended up selling for a tidy sum. So they learned the lessons.
Right.
And it goes to show that everything that we do is an experiment, right? The two things that I was listening to a podcast today, and these are about entrepreneurs who are actually raising capital, and they keep saying that why are you doing this? It can't just be about the money.
Right.
Now, if you're running a business, unless you inherited the business, there's a reason why you started it, right? There's a reason, and you must have purpose. And they say the reason, the two things that are key elements to raising capital, increasing the value of your company are purpose and persistence. Purpose, why are you doing this, right? Why do you build it, and why do you want to sell it? What is the purpose for doing what you do? And then the other one is persistent. Are you persistent enough? Do you believe in your business enough that you're going to keep working at it? Because if you started this company and you're not long, you just checked out and you let your employees and you're not long, you know, leaders are those who have followers. If you don't have followers, you're not a leader, right? You have to be the leader of your company. What do you think?
We have a client currently, we're working on a buy-sell agreement. The client is has been in business for many, many years. We're third generation now.
Third generation?
Third generation. Wow. Business has been going and has weathered the storm. Solid, solid, good folks, good business. But there was a decision along the line to sell to a non-family member.
Okay.
And that brought about a whole nother list of scenarios that happened. And I think that's really what you're saying about understanding, because in the seller's mind, keeping the business alive was the most important thing. The keeping the business going was it. That was the most important thing. And even if I had to sell to somebody who's not a family member, the name stays alive. And so knowing your purpose, and some people, that's not how they would feel. Some people have said, hey, my grandfather, father dedicated, you know, all of their lives to this and that. And maybe the next generation wants it and does it or doesn't want it.
Yeah.
But understanding that purpose and not getting, you know, and being able to stay focused on that purpose was what allowed them to make a decision to sell to a non-family member. But the non-family member had that same passion and drive for the business and wants to keep it going. And so it goes forward and it lives on. And that was what the seller wanted, ultimately, that the business lives on.
Why? Because they had a purpose for that business,
because
right?
Because he had a purpose and he's lived his purpose and he's lived this business.
Okay.
But he understood his purpose.
So we got a minute left before the next commercial break. So any thoughts more on that? Claudine?
Yeah, I think that knowing why you're doing what you're doing, and then it helps you narrow down your market when you are preparing to sell. You know, what is the new buyer going to come and completely change the purpose of the business?
Right.
Everything you worked for. And maybe you care and maybe you don't care. There's people who absolutely don't care, and businesses completely morph with a new owner. They take a new shape and
correct.
They go on.
Yeah.
And that's not bad. I don't think there is a right or wrong in this scenario. It's just understanding.
So good stuff. We're going to start wrapping things up and get into some other topics in a little bit. But stay tuned. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine and Power Talk, 1360 AM. Wow, welcome. We're having some just great conversation with Radin while we were on break. So more on that and other topics. But welcome back. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Can you believe it's just this? This topic, we just barely just unpacking.
Barely.
Oh, my gosh. There's so much to talk about. And now, so we're talking about those 7 steps to increase value. It's about value. The more value your business has, the more potential, money that you can get. Because at the end of the day, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Right?
It is. And I think, during the break, we were kind of talking about the concept of franchises.
Yeah.
One of the things that makes franchising so attractive is that it is the extreme idea that somebody has taken a business, thought out all of the details, ironed out everything right down to the color scheme. You could not have a sandwich made any more simply and thought out than a Subway franchise. I mean, they have thought it all out to the number of ounces, the cheese, how it's
done to the shape of the green pepper.
That's correct.
Isn't that crazy?
It is the extreme.
Right.
And if you consider your own business to be a version of franchising, and if you consider that your buyer wants to be able to come in and pick up a business that's already running. There's value in that. That's why they're willing to pay. But they don't want to have to necessarily come in and rebuild it, restock everything, buy all new trucks. If you have a construction business and, you need 5 trucks and you have neglected to maintain your equipment, that's not what buyers are looking for. And if you are not clear on giving your buyer what your buyer's looking for, that's when you get involved with litigation. And that is the big L you want to avoid.
Interesting.
It's managing those expectations. But take your business and consider it like a franchise, just maybe not as extreme.
So I put I'm all in pro of giving, I'm constantly giving advice, and I think I give it freely. I don't want any potential business owners make mistakes I've made in the past. So I give them this advice. I am passionate, just like you are, about helping business owners build businesses that are profitable and sustainable.
Right.
And sometimes if I make a couple of comments, I say, Dave, when was the last time you had your standard operating agreement or your standard operating procedures? It's all about standard operating procedures. Tweaked.
Mm-hmm.
They go, we don't even have one. Right. What is there to tweak?
Job,
right?
In my world, job descriptions.
What's that?
Well, they know what they're doing.
I know.
It needs to be written down.
So number four, so we talked about number one, seek advice. Number two, boost your profits of your business on the 7 steps to increase value. Number three is increase sales and lower expenses. Number four is continue to invest and improve, right? Again, back to the purpose of your business. If you believe in it, you should be investing back profits of the business. You should be investing them back to perfecting. How obsessive are you about perfecting your product or service?
Right.
Right.
Creating that kind of franchise model where we've ironed out all the details.
I know of a restaurant that wants to franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And, when I hear that, it's just great. This is the bedrock of capitalism is be able to create something that you can expand and scale right across multiple markets. And guess what came to mind? Great. Do you have everything? I mean, they are great. I mean, they've been featured and with Guy Fieri or mm-hmm. what is the name of that show?
Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. I love that show.
Right?
Love it. Triple D.
Triple D has been featured. So this particular restaurant has been featured. And I know the founder, CEO. And what a great concept. And we're going to leave it like that because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But more on that at a later day. But I asked, great, you want a franchise. People are coming to you. What do you have to offer?
Yeah. You have to be able to iron out everything. I mean, your recipes have to be cookie cutter.
He said, what do you mean?
Well, right.
What do you have to – how does – when? What does the experience look like when somebody walks through the door, the color scheme? Have you trademarked your logo? Is that protected? Do you have any intellectual property? Now your sauces, the way you prepare the food, is there a process that you take that through to down to how many degrees does the oven need to be and how you pre-season? How do you cook? What does the customer see? If I'm a hungry if I'm a customer coming in to your door, right? What does the process look like? Have you experienced that yourself as a potential customer going through your own? Because, you know, owners get diluted. They get like, oh, well, they should know that. Nobody should know anything.
Right. No, it's foolproof. You're creating a foolproof system, as foolproof as it can possibly be. So somebody can come in. I mean, somebody can come in and not have any idea about the restaurant business, and you're giving them and the ABC 1, 2, 3 steps.
And it's funny. I'm reading number 5, create a strategic plan, and we spend time up talking about it. But number 6 is develop a repeatable process and empower your people.
There you go.
I was not even looking at this 10 minutes ago, and we were already talking about it. Yeah. I guess we're always thinking about the process, and your business needs to be repeatable.
Predictable.
We got a caller, guys. Coming in, so come in, caller, Trademarks for Business. Oh, Kai, come on in. Who do we have on the line?
Hey, this is Ed. How you doing?
Ed, welcome to the show.
So my question was regarding trademarks. When you sign up your company and you're protecting your legal name, should you hold it through the corporation or should you hold it personally?
Well, that's a really good question, and that is... depending on your actual unique circumstances, you can hold it individually, and then if you sell your business, that is a separate asset that you would be selling. However, if it is attached to your business, so for example, you have a restaurant franchise, and that logo goes along with it, then it becomes an asset of the business. It's hard to answer that directly because it really depends on the unique circumstances, but it can be done either way.
But you possibly could have a liability issue, right, if you hold it personally?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. May I ask what type of business this is?
Just in general, I own a corporation. It's a real estate company that doing mortgages and stuff. And basically,
got it.
The company name's owned by the corporation. I was just curious because somebody else was talking about it, and I just want to ask you guys.
Yep.
Yes, great point. And you know what? At some point, if you create enough traction, use something that you seriously have to consider because it takes, you know, with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, it takes a while. you get some help in the IP, you know, with some legal expert.
Yeah, and you can trademark federally or you can trademark in California, and the rules are different. California's a lot, you know, more simple. And if you're just doing business in California, you may consider that. It becomes part of the intellectual property, and I think a lot of business owners are not really conscious of even the social media. And in your industry, you probably do use social media to promote the business. That social media now is an asset, and it is part of your intellectual property.
Wow, that's a great...
People don't realize that. So
interesting.
You really have to look at everything as being an asset. So if it's owned by the corporation, not a bad thing at all, depending on, you know, and if you're going to sell, again, that becomes an asset of the business. And that's something you can sell if you're going to do an asset only purchase or an entire corporate shareholder purchase.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Awesome.
Thank you
so much for having you as a listener.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Hey, so...
That's
great stuff.
Yeah, interesting that a lot of people are not really aware when they sell their business, all of that social media that you've been doing. And some businesses are more heavy in it than others. But social media also is part of your branding. And it also does include, if you're going to trademark, that becomes your intellectual property. And you need to protect that.
So if you're a business who has relies heavily like on Instagram, mm-hmm. right, or Facebook to drive traffic back to your site, how does that work if you, you know, mistakenly violate some type of covenant with the social media platform? You get kicked out. They have no, how does that work? Like, do you have any, recourse? Do they have any protection, like, because of your brand?
Does who have protection? Does the social media site have protection?
No, I guess what I'm saying is if you get kicked out of a social media platform, first of all, it's not good.
Correct.
You know,
and you're on the platform at their leisure.
At their leisure, right. I understand that. But, okay, so, wow, we got a minute left. But that's something that I'm curious about, is because, you know, you should do everything you can not to get kicked out.
Of course.
But if you are, if you're in social media, it's because you want to be known.
Correct.
Right. If
correct.
You want to be known, you must want to protect your brand.
Right.
Right. Because if you're not protecting your brand from the outset, then you're probably asking for trouble. Right.
You need to protect your brand from the outset. You absolutely do.
So this is great stuff. I hope it helped you. Number seven was, ironically, stand out from the crowd. And we were just talking about social media and our caller trying to protect, you know, secure the copyrights to their IP. So we're going to continue to develop topics over the next few weeks and have guests. We have a guest coming up on March 27th on growth marketing, which is, you know, growth hacking, which is going to be, you guys are going to love it.
A lot of intellectual property stuff right there.
Right
because
there.
That's what they're building.
So we are grateful to have you in our audience as listeners. And tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. on Powertop AM Modesto 1360. And we're going to bring you some great topics. And just as always, be straight talk about business and what you need to do to grow a business that is profitable and sustainable. So have a great Saturday. And this is Business and Legal Talk with Leon Claudine.
Thank you.
Talk to you next Saturday. Bye.
Bye-bye.